Welcome to CI, Confronting Issues, bringing a progressive faith perspective to the issues of today.
And we're live at the Leland Tea Company in San Francisco in the Lower Fulton neighborhood. Welcome to this edition of CI on this Veterans Day 2009. And before I get started too far, I just want to, since it is Veterans Day and today's program is about veterans, and I am a veteran, I just want to thank all of our veterans out there and people who are currently serving for your service past, present, and those of you who will be going in shortly. Thank you for making that commitment to our country and to your own service and your own pride. Today is going to be a special day. We've got a lot of ground to cover. There's a lot of issues that are in the news that relate to veterans, for a change. So with me today, I have three guests, and we'll sort of take them in, not particularly order of importance, but just in order. And first is, I have a chaplain from the Veterans Administration Hospital System in Palo Alto, the Reverend Penny Phillips, who is, by ordination, a United Church of Christ minister, but she works there for the VA. And so, Penny, would you like to take a minute and just explain briefly your mission there at the Veterans Administration?
Thank you, Lucia. Thanks for inviting me today. I'm very happy to be here, and happy Veterans Day to everyone. I have been a part of the Palo Alto healthcare system for about 14 years. My main focus is hospice and palliative care, although I'm certainly available for the, when I'm on call, I go throughout the hospital. But my focus is hospice and palliative care, both in Palo Alto and in Menlo Park. We tend to serve World War II veterans, but we are getting younger folks in their 40s and 50s. Who have been serving and yet now are hospice appropriate for a variety of reasons. So we are there for their families as well. I'm involved with grief and bereavement support. I also take care of our volunteers. We have a very active hospice volunteer program, and I'm really proud to be part of that and get them on board, and they provide so much for our veterans. My own father was a Navy military officer for 30 years, so I grew up in the Navy, and he died some time ago, but I'm very proud to be at the VA. It's a good match for where I think I should be right now.
Good. Well, I want to thank you for serving our veterans and stepping up to working at the Veterans Administration, and even if you are a Navy brat. I'll excuse it because most of my family was Navy, even though I went in the Army. But, also joining me is by telephone is the Reverend Brian Baker, who's an Episcopal priest in Sacramento and a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point, and also a member of Nights Out, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender alumni group of West Point. And so, Brian, would you like to take a quick minute and tell us a little bit about your ministry?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you for having me on the program, and happy Veterans Day. A little bit of my background is I grew up in an Air Force family. My father was a career Air Force officer, and then after high school went to West Point, and Andrea can fill in. We started dating when we were in high school, so we both went to West Point together. Went to West Point. I was in the Army for 5 years and then got out to become an Episcopal priest. I've been ordained for 18 years now, and I'm now the dean or the senior priest of Trinity Cathedral in Sacramento. I'm an Episcopal priest. It's an Episcopal congregation.
Great. Well, I want to thank you both for your service and commend you on finishing the military academy. That is not an easy curriculum. I was just an enlisted swine, so I didn't have the privilege of being an officer. By the time I smartened up, I was too old. And also joining me is Brian's wife, Andrea. She's here with us in San Francisco. And she is a seminarian at the Episcopal Seminary in Berkeley. And so would you like to take a quick minute, Andrea, tell us a little bit about your call and your service?
Yes, Regis. Thank you for having me on the show today. It's a pleasure to be here, and happy Veterans Day to everyone. I am in my third year of seminary at the Church Divinity School of the Pacific, and will complete my course of study in May. And for me, this has been about a 20-year call, and I'm finally getting around to saying, yes, God, I will be there. I grew up in a military family. My father was in the Army Band program and was the leader of the Army Band in Washington for a number of years. So I grew up in the military with a strong background in military service in my family, on both my father's side of the family and my mother's side. And went to West Point. I was the fifth class to graduate women from the Academy in 1984, and then served as a Signal Corps officer in the 25th Infantry Division in Hawaii, and then as the Pentagon Operations Company commander for the 1101st Signal Brigade in the Washington, D.C. area. So commanded the soldiers who were in the communications unit in the Pentagon, and that was back in the late 80s, early 90s. And it's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you.
Well, I'm your host, Risha Ann Young, and I, as I said earlier, I am an Army veteran. I come from a family where all of my brothers are veterans. We hit all the services pretty much. I have a brother who is a launch control officer in the Air Force, a brother who's a career Navy man, was a Navy SEAL, and then was a chief pattern maker in the Navy, which meant he was a really great carpenter, builds beautiful furniture. And Then during Vietnam, when I graduated from high school, I was facing the draft or enlistment, so I enlisted, and I worked in a now command that's been dissolved, the Army Security Agency. We were the Army's part of the National Security Agency, so we were spooks and the enemy of the signal officers, as we were always busting your communications out or yelling at you for some reason or another. But as we get going today, really, this program is about faith and living our faith in the 21st century. And part of the challenge, especially those of us of a progressive or liberal nature have, is most of us are advocates, strong advocates for peace. We rally very hard for peace. And sometimes, because of that, we lose sight of how we can minister to our veterans. And we kind of, I don't think we really ignore them out of any conscious thought. We just get wrapped up in the peace, and we can't easily separate taking care of the returning warrior versus our striving for peace. And I think, you know, dealing with the deceased warrior is we have our services and memorials, and it's kind of done, except for the grieving family. But as society, we're kind of done. But what about the living warrior, the ones who return? And it's been a subject for all of recorded history that I can find. You read the Odyssey by Homer, and that's exactly what the whole story is about, is a returning warrior. But how do we accept them back in our society? How do we take care of them with the social contract that we make with them, that we commit to take care of their needs, and that we've sent them maybe into war, maybe during the Cold War, which oftentimes was hotter than people think. So how do we take care of them? That's part of the challenge that we're going to explore a little bit today. But I think first off, there's kind of an 800-pound gorilla in the room, and that is about current military policy, don't ask, don't tell. That's in the news. I think most of us who are veterans believe that it impedes readiness. And it has an impact on veterans because all the returning people, whether they're straight or LGBT, are veterans, and they're going to need medical care. And if we add to the stresses, they're going to need more psychological care and more counseling. So it is something that has an impact, and an impact on people who serve today, because we're discharging people with critical skills at a time when we're at war. We have combat troops in Afghanistan, Iraq, the Philippines, and in several other locations around the world. It becomes important to take care of these people as our military is stretched so thin. and especially our guardsmen and reservists who are bearing the brunt of these deployments and oftentimes have the fewest resources to care for them when they return. So I'm going to talk a little bit initially about don't ask, don't tell, to kind of clear that elephant out of the room. And that's one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons that Brian and Andrea are here as members of Nights Out. That organization is very vocal about lifting don't ask, don't tell. There is a bill in the House of Representatives now, the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, that would lift don't ask, don't tell. The Congressman Patrick Murphy from Pennsylvania, who is himself an Iraq veteran, he's like me, an alumni of the 82nd Airborne. So he jumped out of a perfectly good airplane. You can argue the sense of that later.
Bishop Ryan and I have both recently become members of Nights Out, which, as he explained, is the organization for gay and lesbian graduates of the academy, cadets who are actually currently there, and also folks who left the academy for various reasons. And we are considered allies, and I like to call us friendly forces. And I'm passionate personally about this issue because I do have several friends in the military and West Point classmates and other friends who are gay or lesbian. And what West Point teaches us ultimately is the motto, duty, honor, country. And we are taught that integrity is the most important thing that we carry forward into our military service as officers. And the troubling thing about the don't ask, don't tell policy is that you're asking soldiers, you're asking officers to lie about who they are, and you're asking them to basically breach the integrity that we are asked to uphold in our military service. It was interesting this morning to read in the paper that even the American Medical Association has taken a stand on this and put out an opinion saying that they also believe that it is not healthy for soldiers and Marines and air service people to serve under this policy. It's not mentally healthy, it's not emotionally healthy, and they really don't see a need to keep that policy in place.
Hey, thank you, Andrea. I know for me, as an intelligence professional from the military, I served during Vietnam, then I came back, I took a 4-year break in service, came back to the military service, and served from 78 through 86 in both reserves and active duty. But integrity was a lot of what I learned in the military. And as an intelligence officer with security clearances, integrity was even more important. And so going back to our oath of service where we promise, we commit before God to bear true faith and allegiance, I don't know how we can do that when then we are ordered to lie. Our very first command as a soldier is to lie. And it's not a request from the military. They're not asking us to. They're telling us to. That how can we maintain the integrity, the highest standards of our military service? How can these young women and men expect to come out unscathed mentally or psychologically if we are demanding that they lie about themselves and lie to the people around them? It just doesn't make sense, especially in, I know myself coming from Army units, spending time in special operations units that are very close-knit, where that relationship, you can't hide things from people. And they're going to figure it out. And right now, people are serving. I've read, talked with veterans from Iraq and Iran and Afghanistan, and I hope not Iran. That was too many years ago. That they serve openly, and it doesn't bother them. This generation of soldiers, it doesn't bother them. And so it's time to bring integrity back to our military, I believe. And I think for those of you who, especially outside the Bay Area, who have representatives, I would really suggest you urge that they support the MREA and support the lifting of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And, well, you give me a microphone, I'm a preacher, so I'll start sermonizing again pretty soon. And we really have a lot more ground to cover today, because we're covering a range of people from World War II veterans to people who are presently in Iraq and Afghanistan, that's a huge amount of time in years, and it represents a huge amount of our national treasure. Our finest treasure are young men and women. Now we have spent since the 40s, since World War II, every generation has been spent on some battle, war, conflict, however you want to tag it, somewhere in the world. And the purpose here today is not to debate whether we should have been in those conflicts or not. That's for another era. That's for a political discussion. But how do we care for those veterans? And I guess what I would ask you, Penny, because you're in a VA medical center, or hospital system, excuse me, a huge medical center, and I do mean huge, that what do you think is one of the most important needs that you see that others can help with in dealing with our veterans?
I would hope that when we meet a veteran, and they're everywhere, veterans are everywhere. They're in our churches, they're in our businesses, they're in our various work settings. Veterans are everywhere to say thank you for your service to our country. It seems like such a simple thing, but it can really start some conversation and some communication. And if, in fact, a veteran doesn't want to talk about his or her service, then we have to respect that. But we can still say thank you. Veterans are out there, and some do not want to talk about their service for whatever reason, and yet we still, I think, just saying thank you for your service to our country is a very good bridge, a very nice way of sort of gathering, starting the communication. And respecting their silence, if that's what they feel like. We have families, POWs and Purple Heart winners, that their families have never heard about their experience. And we have to honor them and respect that silence and still offer our gratitude that they did this for us and for the country. Again, to just reiterate, veterans are everywhere in our society and our culture, and some are more open about it than others. And yet we still, when we can, take that moment to say thank you, and then that might lead to some other kinds of conversation. It's interesting, I'm reflecting on a couple of years ago, a friend said to me, oh, you work at the Veterans Hospital. You know, you must hear that all the veterans are really gung-ho on war, and they really want to get into the action. And I haven't found that. A lot of veterans are very strong peacekeepers and want peace, whether it's because they've seen it and now they want the peace, or they've always been peaceful people and yet they still were able to serve the country. Not all veterans are gung-ho war. So there's a range of attitudes in the veteran culture. There's different cultures, you know, within the veteran communities, and we have to be aware that when you meet one vet, you really meet one vet. You can't make big generalizations. And so to honor that person and that the culture that he comes from within the veteran community, and just to end with, some veterans don't always feel comfortable with other veterans because of the kind of conflict they were in, the kind of reception they got coming back, the kind of injuries they themselves sustained. So not all veterans automatically get along with each other, too. So just to keep that in mind.
Well, thank you. I think that the biggest thing I pick up, and I agree with the experience, that most veterans that I know, and again, this is my own personal experience, tend to be a little quiet about their war service, especially if they're combat veterans. Some of it is just, you don't want to be reminded. So that thank you is important, because we haven't always felt that. In fact, sometimes it's been the opposite when it's come back. And there's a lot of argument I've picked up on the web about whether some of those experiences are true or not, but I know it was for me. that when I, after Vietnam, I hid my veteran status a lot, especially in employment. Because there was the assumption I was either a drug addict or was completely wacky instead of just moderately wacky. And so we kept quiet. But I agree that respect of that silence. And that also, I guess I would add that if a veteran does choose to reveal something to you, that's a precious time.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think a big change in terms of our administration, you know, today the president walked in the cemetery, specifically in the Iraq and Afghani veterans' grave sites. And he's been present when the caskets have come back, and to really make it much more visible and out there rather than trying to cover up all of the deaths over the last several years. So I have to say, I think this is a good coming out in the open sort of thing that I noticed, I'd say, in the last year.
Yeah, I think people need to be aware of the cost. It's very easy to just say, well, we should go over and do this or that, or let's just send troops. I hear a lot of my liberal friends were saying, well, why don't we send troops to Chad or to Darfur? And like, what do you think would be different there than different in Iraq? I mean, they're soldiers. They do what soldiers do. And, you know, that's, you know, why? Why would you expect a different outcome? And, in fact, I think that's the definition of insanity is the same behavior expecting a different outcome. Andrea and I have been working in preparation for this program on the idea of liturgies to welcome veterans home. And Andrea has been doing a lot of work on it. She's discovered a lot of resources. And I think that welcome home or thank you or the acknowledgement from local churches, whether the pastors, the veteran status of the clergy really doesn't matter here. It's really a community welcoming back someone or welcoming someone in, back into their community and promising to stand with them. But Andrew, could I get your thoughts real quick as we're about 2 minutes away from break?
Yes, I would love to speak to that. In Asian cultures, you and I have discussed, Lisa, there were often rituals that when a warrior came back from war, there was a purification rite of some kind, a period of time before the warrior could actually re-enter the community, so that they were in a state of mind where they could be with their people again. And I think our culture is hungry for that kind of a ritual in, you know, my church's terms, some sort of liturgical rite that would be helpful to that. I know that United Methodist Church has done a lot of work in this area. There's a Navy chaplain, Laura Bender, who is actually, I believe today, they are commissioning the new USS New York in New York City, and she has been the one planning that ceremony today. And she has written two liturgies for the United Methodist Church, one a sending off liturgy that the church community would do for the service member going away, and then also a welcome home liturgy. And I've been looking at what resources the Episcopal Church has. And we do have a sending off liturgy. We do not have a welcome home liturgy. And the other thing, because we are a liturgical sacramental denomination, that I am interested in looking into is some sort of a sacramental rite of reconciliation that can be done privately.
Well, let's hold that thought as we head into break here. It's time, I guess, for everyone to top off their coffee or iced tea and take a little short break. So we'll see you back in 4 minutes, and we'll pick up the thoughts about a returning home liturgy.
Words can't truly describe what you see. Words can't truly describe what you hear. Yet some words can inspire you to see and hear images and sounds impossible to describe. Janubiat, language of the heart. You've never heard anything like it, but like it you will. JANUBIA.com. Available on iTunes and Amazon.
Thoughts you hide is what I've tried. Although you keep them all buried inside, hear all the words you say to my dismay. Though you keep pushing me further away, hold on to what's not there. But do I know?
Hey, this is Rick Holden, and you're listening to BBSRadio.com, just the best darn internet radio network there ever was or ever will be. And you can get my song, Killing Me, on my album, Holding Out, at RickHolden.com for less than the price of 2 gallons of gasoline. Wait a minute, I just checked. You make that 1 gallon. Sorry about that. Girl, you're killing me. What a way to go.
Hi, this is Dan Millman, author of Way of the Peaceful Warrior and the new book, Wisdom of the Peaceful Warrior, and you're listening to BBS Radio.
Hi, this is Mark O'May. I'm really happy you're enjoying BBSRadio.com.
Hello. This is Wesley Snipes. And when I want to get tuned in, tuned up, and not tuned out, I listen to Dr. Fred Bell, Health and Sciences Show on BBSRadio.com. Om. Mary had a little lamb, Mary had a little lamb, and went off to the Pleiades. Woo!
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastikos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.
Company in San Francisco with this special Veterans Day edition of CI Confronting Issues today, which is about veterans. And when we left for break, we were talking about welcome home liturgies or rituals for returning veterans. And it's been a part of many cultures throughout history, although it's something that is kind of new to us here in the United States. Some churches are developing resources right now for it. Some don't have it. I think interest from one church to another would probably vary depending on their experience, whether they have veterans, whether they don't, whether they're ministering to a family of a deployed person or not. All that will influence those decisions about whether or not there is some type of ritual or in the case of a church like ours, at United Church of Christ or Episcopal, a liturgy. So we may throw out some of these religious terms. I ask any of you out there listening to please go ahead and call. The call-in numbers are there on your screen as you listen on the internet site at bbsradio.com. The numbers are there, especially veterans. We know that, you know, I don't want you to talk if you don't want to, but, you know, please, your stories are important. I think now as we consider more avenues of war and peace in our national policies, we need to hear from veterans because we're the ones who pay the price. and it will be our children, my daughter, my son, our daughters and sons and children who will pay the price for that. And so we bear the burden. So it doesn't surprise me that veterans are stronger voices for peace. We're the ones who shed the blood. And so, we have a stake in it too. And so I think you need to hear the voices about the true cost of this.
Reminds me of part of the argument in our society, Risha, is, we can support our military soldiers and still be for peace. And some people don't see that or don't get it. That's been my experience, and it's real frustrating. Yes, of course we can support our military and our young people going to serve and be peacemakers, both and to me.
Yes, I think, Brian, now that we have you back, that our technical difficulty seems at least temporarily solved, what are your thoughts about ritual or liturgy for returning veterans and part of that community welcoming or community thank you to a veteran?
I think a couple things. One is that we are so ADD as a culture and easily distracted, and part of the challenge of us in welcoming veterans is it's hard for us to keep that on our radar. Our attentions are drawn to whatever's catching the headlines at the time, and the flow of veterans and the need to support veterans is an ongoing situation in our culture. But if it's not on the headlines, it's hard for us to focus on it. And I think having rituals and creating rituals that become part of the normal flow of the life of a community helps us keep our attentions focused on veterans. And to comment on the comment about from Penny about bearing the cost of or wanting to support our troops, but also wanting to be for peace, I think they go hand in hand because we've done such a poor job in our country of counting the cost, the real cost of going to war, because we don't do a good job of caring for our veterans when they come back. I think if we had a sober, open-eyed look at the actual cost to our culture of going to war, because we took caring for veterans seriously, we would think more carefully before we put ourselves in the situation of making soldiers go into harm's way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to phrase it that pretty much the same thought a little differently, that if our leaders had to go into battle or actually lead us into battle, they would think twice a lot more about committing soldiers to war. But here
if they asked us to pay for it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. We have here joining us today some in our live audience, a couple people who I know are chomping at the bit to make a comment. One is Paul from San Francisco. He's my chaplain at my American Legion post 448. And Paul, yeah, you have a comment or question, fire away.
Yes. Well, in my particular case, I served in World War II, and I had two battle stars, and warship. And at that time, I had no idea about my sexual preference, or whatever they call it. I knew I was different, but I didn't know exactly why. And I think that particular experience helps a lot to explain some of the things we've been talking about here today. And I appreciate very much the points made by all the parties today. And I'm making a comment rather than that. But the one thing I want to mention is that we too, in my 4 years as chaplain of the Bush 448 in San Francisco, Alexander Hamilton, was that we too have this division of those who believe that it's solved, and we can continue to do this as long as we keep doing this. We're going to gain. How would we like any person of any other faith to come into this restaurant like you and poke a gun on our face and say, "You're with us, aren't you?" In other words, your religion doesn't count. This gun is telling you, you're going to do what I say. Okay? And what kind of an introduction to faith is that?
That's a great concern. And I think the challenge to many churches, to many faith communities, regardless of their particular tradition, is the within their commitment to their being right or wrong, however they want to view it, is that tolerance of other points of view. It seems almost contradictory to a democratic society that if you get into so much dogma where the world is either right or wrong, that it's hard to live in a pluralistic or egalitarian culture that holds that democratic value, or in a culture as powerful as the United States is, to go into another country and say, well, you know, you're not anything unless you're little clones of us. Unless we turn out little stamps of little, you know, made in America babies, that you're not with it. You're not smart enough.
Thank you very much.
Those are huge issues for all of us to consider, and throughout, I mean, they come up all the time in our national policy, our political debates, and they drive the decisions that create the veterans that we're talking about today. I mean, think about this. We're talking today about people who served in the 1940s, all the way up to people who are serving now in 2009. Think of those years, all of which contain veterans. People who have served in the military, be it in wartime or even the Cold War, but they served in a capacity, you know, take a minute and think about that. That's a huge investment of our country's talent and its most precious treasure, its people. Not, you know, more than money, but its people, its blood, or its young people. And it's young people who bear the price of this. And then we carry it with us, hopefully we make it to old age, but, you know, an increasing number of our soldiers are not making it to old age, they're ending their own lives. The suicide rate in the Army finally exceeded the civilian suicide rate. That is appalling to me. That it's not the Army that I knew even 30 years ago. And I've come back in tears from that, especially looking at my elite unit of being an airborne, coming from an airborne unit. I looked at the 101st and their suicide rate, and I was just beside myself. But how, what's happening? These are elite people. These are motivated young people. What happened? And I've concluded that somehow in our culture, we are not providing them hope. And I think as people of faith, that's the commodity that we hold that no one else holds, is hope.
Yes.
And that's the commodity that's needed out there and in our VA hospitals and with our returnees. Can I change? There's a great line from the Lord of the Rings movies where Frodo is kind of depressed and they're looking at Gollum, this wretched creature that nobody likes. And he helps him, and his companion asks him, "Why are you helping him?" "I have to know I can come back." And I think that's an apt description, I think, for many veterans, not all, but many, who, "I have to know I can come back. I have to know I can regain my life, that I can come back to some, whatever seems normalcy, whatever that is." And I think that's our challenge. Here, that we're talking about here as we're discussing it, is the challenge of how do we enhance that? How do we as people, this huge problem beyond any one person, but how do we as individuals begin to address that? And I think even going back to the older veterans, Penny, that you talk about, there's similarity in, obviously, the wars are different, and we can get hung up and talking about, you know, oh, it's different when I served, and, you know, we didn't have this when I was in, or whatever. You can get into those differences, but that's really a canard. It's really a waste of time, because it really steers away from the central issue. War is war. It's ugly business. There's nothing very glorious about it, in spite of what we do with ceremonies and medals and all of that. It's not very glorious. It's messy, dirty, ugly work. And its job is destruction.
Richard, that's just for me. Yeah, because you've said all of these comments have been really helpful. And I think one of the things that we're forgetting, or not necessarily forgetting, but that in 1973, when we went to an all-volunteer army, things shifted dramatically. Another statistic I read this morning was that it used to be that about 80%, and I don't have that statistic exactly right, but of elected officials in Congress and the Senate had military service. We're down to about 30% now. So our leadership doesn't completely understand what it's like to be in the military service and to go to war. That's one piece of it. And what we're doing with our National Guard and our reserve soldiers right now is, as you commented during the break, that they can expect to go to be deployed to Afghanistan or Iraq about once every 2 years. And we're burning our people out, is what's happening. We have a small group of Americans who are going over and serving, and then they're going again and again and again. So the PTSD issue that we see in World War II veterans, and that I find serving in the VA hospital last summer in internship. And what I saw in some of these vets is that on their deathbed, they were talking about the Battle of the Bulge. They were talking about their experiences in Vietnam. Those memories and feelings don't go away, and it's just being exacerbated by the amount of times that soldiers are deployed. And fewer of us, as Brian was pointing out, are, you know, keeping that in our sight because the headlines shift every day. We had a traumatic event in this country last week in Fort Hood, Texas, and are we going to remember that next week or the next week or the next week? I don't know. We're seeing it right now because there was a service yesterday, and the president and the first lady were there. But it is important, I think, as people of faith, that we keep lifting that up, even as peacemakers, that we are attentive to folks in our congregation, who maybe know somebody who's serving. And even if not, look for ways to support veterans by offering liturgy or by offering care packages or something that helps them to feel supported and to have hope.
I think we're coming up on our last break of the program. It'll be another 4-minute break, and we're almost ready to go. And then we'll come back and we'll be wrapping up. And I think as we wrap up, I'd like us to think about some comments on how do we bring that to local congregations and local individuals. How do we do the work of the gospel? How do we free these people? How do we do that? So we're up here for another break. It's about time to refill. Either refill your coffee or iced tea or take a visit to the loo, and if you filled it before. And so we'll see you back here in 4 minutes.
Hi, everybody. This is Senior Seaver. And you're listening to Dr. Bell. Well, I forgot to say who I am. Sorry about that.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, keep that, Don. Be sure and keep that in there. I like those improvs. Yeah, go ahead. Especially with a laugh and all that.
Yeah. Who am I? I just forgot.
And we're back with the Leland Tea Company in the Lower Polk neighborhood of San Francisco on this Veterans Day edition of CI, Confronting the Issues. And I'm here returning with my guest, Brian Baker, an Episcopal priest in Sacramento, his wife, Andrea, an Episcopal seminarian, the Reverend Penny Phillips, who is a chaplain at the VA hospital system in Palo Alto, California. We have an audience of some people from my church, First Congregational Church in San Francisco, and my chaplain from Post 448 of the American Legion, the Alexander Hamilton Post, the only LGBT post in the American Legion. And so we're very proud of that. And so I'm really glad to have them here because it's a holiday, yay! And here we are, the only ones working. Actually, it's not so much work. It's really fun doing these programs. But as we come up to the last few minutes here, I think it's important for us to realize that we all have a role to play, too. And that the whole reason that I create this program is to think about, as individuals, believers, regardless of our faith tradition, regardless of our denominational values, how can we live out that faith in this 21st century faced with these problems that seem so different than what we read in these 2,000-year-old wisdom literature? So that's part of the challenge I would ask as we kind of get here and get ready to wrap up. I would ask my guests to kind of think in those terms a little bit. And Brian, do you have any thoughts as we get towards the end? On kind of how we bring this home.
Brian?
Oh, Brian, did your phone slip out again? Oh, those pesky, no. Never fear. We always have a plan B. So join us here as he's a member of my congregation. He also is the medical librarian at the VA Hospital System Center in Palo Alto. Ken, and go ahead. Give us a minute or two on your thoughts on this.
Earlier, we mentioned the concept of cost, that is, we knew the cost or accepted it before we went to war. But today, we do have other cost concepts that we don't really think about, and especially one that is really poignant is the very high percentage of our homeless population that are also veterans, that are dealing with the homelessness as well as the issues of them and their war experience. And another issue is those that are coming back from war that are alive. It's a much larger percentage than in other wars. The only thing, they're coming back with a very high percentage of trauma that is very, very large. And our hospital is one of the system of polytrauma centers, and we deal with this issue very immediately every day. So these are costs that, to me, probably would, if statistically analyzed, would outweigh the cost that the war really is costing.
Good point. I think there's, we talk a lot about when you make a decision, there's intended consequences, and there are the unintended consequences of decisions. And that when we make these decisions about war and not reflect on any particular political official, but their decisions. And so I think even in Scripture, called Count the Cost. And even the great warrior Sun Tzu translated Count the Cost. So, and keeping that in mind, that there's a social cost, it's kind of hard to put that all in dollars about homelessness and things.
But Andrea, what are some of your closing thoughts on that?
And I'm thinking not only as faith communities, but just as people of faith. Programs like on Treasure Island, the transition program they have where they're taking homeless veterans, putting them in housing, giving them 2 years of drug and alcohol rehabilitation if that's something that they need, giving them other skills, helping them write resumes, helping them find jobs so that they are transitioning back into society. I think we need to invest in those kinds of programs to counter the cost that we're seeing for our country right now and for these men and women and their families.
Okay, Penny, I'll give you a little while to give some of your closing thoughts.
I've seen some churches be very creative about how they honor, remember, recognize those, either those who have died in the military or who are actively serving. They try to keep the names of the people right up in front of our consciousness, either in the bulletin or the monthly newsletter. They've made quilts to hang on the wall to help us remember these folks and keep them in prayer. I think there are some very creative, loving ways to honor those who are actively serving. And even if the church does not have their own member serving, there's going to be somebody in their church that knows somebody else, a neighbor or a friend or my colleague's son is there, and those names need to be included in the church recognition, I think.
So keeping the names before us, where this pesky clock is catching up with us, and before I close, I want to thank my engineers, Seth and Don in Paradise. How many people can say their radio show originates in Paradise? And my guest, Brian, I want to thank you. I want to thank you.
You're welcome.
And Penny, for making some of your precious holiday time available to us. I want to thank my audience members and friends from my church and my American Legion post. And I say in our next program in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about how we reach people on the streets, and our guest will be the Reverend Lyle Beckman, the Night Minister of San Francisco. And I just ask you as we get ready to close here, if you see a veteran today or no one, tell them thank you and really take some time to appreciate them. And the clock has run out of us. We are out of time. So we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lisa. I was shocked when I heard that you used to say, oh, where are you going?
You have been listening to CI, Confronting the Issues. For comments or questions on this or any CI program, contact us via the web at www.myciradio.com. I'm your host, Risha Ann Young. Join us for the next edition of CI right here on the BBS Radio Network, Channel 2.